Meet! Yo!
What are we fighting over?
We got some concert tickets.
Jason Aldean, Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, Saturday, August 24th, with special guest Kane Brown. For more information and to get your tickets, go to 101ESPN.com.
All right, very nice. Let's bring in today's fighter. It's Jimmy. Jimmy, how we doing?
Not too bad. How are you guys?
Doing all right, man. You ready to take on Mega Mind today?
I'll do my best.
Let's do it then. Question number one. Kevin Shattenkirk was bought out by the Rangers. Which team traded Shatty to the Blues? That was close. Shatty to the Blues
Holy
in 2011.
Crap.
Very close. Was he traded by Washington, Calgary, or Colorado?
I'm going to go with Colorado.
Question number two. Who led Cubs pitchers last season with 18 total victories? Was it Jose Quintana, John Lester, or Kyle Hendricks?
Hendricks.
Question number three, Jimmy. Melvin Gordon, his agent, requested a trade from the Chargers. Where did Gordon play his college ball? Was it Ohio State, Wisconsin, or Michigan State?
Michigan State.
Can't tell you how you did. Question number four, the Cardinals. This has gone, I think, overlooked. The Cardinals acquired Tony Cingrani yesterday.
Right.
Now, between Cingrani, Brett Cecil, and Greg Garcia, who we do know is a position player.
Yes.
Who is the most recent to pitch in a major league game? Is it Cingrani, Cecil, or Greg Garcia?
Garcia.
Let's bring in Randy. Jimmy, how we feeling?
Not too good.
Okay. All right. That's okay. That's fine. We're having a fun day anyhow. So win, lose, or draw. I mean, we're all having a good time here.
Oh, I'm having a swell time.
Yeah.
I'm just getting ready for Cardinals baseball.
Dude, Cards Cubs game three. It's a rubber match. First place on the line.
Oh, I love the rubber matches.
Match.
Yeah. Yep.
Match.
It's an underused term, isn't it? Splendid.
What?
Splendid isn't
Splendid.
Team. Yeah.
Splendid. Nifty's underused too.
It is. So it's delightful.
It is. We'll start mixing those in. Randy, say hi to Jimmy.
Hey Jimmy, how you doing?
Not too bad. How are you?
Good.
All right, Randy, you ready for this?
Ready.
It's going to be a tough one.
Okay.
Question number one. Kevin Shattenkirk was bought out by the Rangers. Which team traded Shatty to the Blues in 2011?
It was Shatty and that big winger Chris Stewart in exchange for Eric Johnson from Colorado and that center that wore number 18 that I don't remember the name of right off the top of my head. I'll think of him by the end of the thing. But, yeah, it was from Colorado.
Question number two, Randy, who led Cubs pitchers last season with 18 wins?
I believe it was John Lester.
Question number three, Randall. Melvin Gordon wants a trade away from the Chargers. Mm-hmm. Where did he play his college ball?
On Wisconsin, grand old Badger State. Wisconsin, Badgers.
They got a home and home with Alabama coming up.
Yeah, like in 2029.
Yeah, it's going to be nice.
Camp Randall Stadium. My dad used to tell me, because he was from Madison, that Camp Randall Stadium was named after me, when actually I think I was named after it.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. It was a nice sentiment. Question number four, Randy. The Cardinals acquired a player yesterday. Everybody keeps forgetting about it. Tony Cingrani. Tony Cingrani was acquired yesterday. Randy, between Cingrani, Brett Cecil, and position player Greg Garcia. Mm-hmm. Who is the most recent to pitch in a major league game?
I'm going to go Greg Garcia.
We got a winner.
Was it Cecil or was it Cingrani?
It was Cecil. It was Cecil.
Isn't
Jimmy,
it awesome
got
that
you,
we
man. He got
know.
You 3-1. Shattenkirk was traded to the Blues from Colorado in 2011. It is John Lester who led the Cubs with wins last year. He had 18 of them. Melvin Gordon played his college ball at Wisconsin. And Brett Cecil is the last one out of those guys to pitch in a major league game. Happened September 25th, 2018. Tony Cingrani last pitched September 22nd, 2018. And Greg Garcia pitched in a game June 21st of last year. So, Jimmy, thanks for playing, man. Try again.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Jimmy. Appreciate it. Good to have you with us on 101 ESPN. Next up, one of the Cardinals' biggest strengths in the past decade may have morphed into one of their biggest weaknesses and caused them to become the biggest loser on deadline day yesterday. We'll talk about that next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. That's MLB.com's Mike Petriello earlier today here on 101 ESPN. And it wasn't too long ago that the Cardinals were considered a model franchise because of their ability to draft and develop their own guys into legitimate big league players. And there were always players coming up. And just go back to the 2013 World Series. The team had Alan Craig, who had replaced Albert Pujols at first base. Matt Carpenter had slid in at second base and was a top five MVP guy. You had Pete Cosma at short. Freeze had been brought up here, not drafted and developed by the Cardinals. And then you had John Jay, and you had people coming off the bench like Descalso and Adams and Shane Robinson. And on the pitching staff, Wainwright started his major league career with the Cardinals. Lance Lynn, Shelby Miller. You had Rosenthal and Maness and Segrist in the bullpen. You had people like Joe Kelly and Michael Wacha, who was a star in that postseason. Jaime Garcia and Tyler Lyons and Carlos Martinez were on that team. The Cardinals essentially built a World Series team with guys that have been homegrown. And now the players that they have, they've got a lot of homegrown players still, but they don't have the star power that they had before. And the number one starter, by the way, on that 2013 team, Adam Wainwright, went 19-9. He's not what he was. They haven't replaced that ace that was Adam Wainwright back in 2013.
Yeah, that's huge. I still believe that the same principles hold true for the Cardinals. Their base is drafting and developing, and you look at the roster. I mean, it's top to bottom. I mean, these are guys.
Homegrown.
It is. But you're right, they're missing on some of those key pieces. Now, some of the superstars that are on this ball club right now are just starting to do superstar things. And Paul Goldschmidt, certainly not homegrown, but he's yours for the next 5 years. Marcelo Ozuna hopefully coming back this weekend. Then all of a sudden, you've got some star power. But they're still built that way. That's still exactly how they're going to succeed. And I know you referenced 2015, but for a lot of the years, when we're looking at this bulk of the success, even leading up to that, so you're 0-4 through 11. You look at that group, and you had Albert, which that helped out quite a bit. Homegrown, all right. But then the rest of your MVP3 wasn't homegrown. You went out and got those
and
guys.
That was a different era because the Angels didn't think they were going to be able to keep Jim Edmonds around, and the Phillies knew that Scott Rolen wanted to be here. You just can't build a team like Walt Jocketty was able to build a team from 2000 through about 2005.
So I guess that means that overall, and I agree with that, overall, though, it's a huge quandary because if you can't build like that and everybody else is hanging on to their superstars, is the only model to get better to try to tank? Because I don't see how that's possible either if everybody else is doing
it. It's a legit question.
You're legit stuck in the middle is where you're at. Like trying to compete, trying to do everything that you possibly can, but you still end up being that superstar short that you have to get in the first couple of picks of the first round unless you're just lucky enough to strike gold. It sucks.
And that's why I think you kind of have to, and I know the Cardinals aren't going to go this direction because it just isn't their MO and it never really has been. You either have to be really bad for a few years so you can get those high pedigree draft picks so you can or you spend internationally and you invest a lot of money there. For example, guys like Luis Robert, which they did not do, and I think it's going to come back to haunt them because he looks really good and he's torn through three different levels of the minor leagues.
He's the number five prospect in all of baseball.
Yeah, he's torn up all levels of the minor leagues so far this year. So that's probably going to come back to haunt them, I think. But if you're not going to go that direction, and they have decided they are not going to do a tear down and rebuild, and quite frankly, I don't think they have the personnel to be able to tear down. Because the best way you can do that and stock up your farm system is to have a bunch of pieces that other teams really want and are willing to give you a bunch of prospects to make happen. Who do you have to do that right now? With the exception of guys like Jack Flaherty, but he's already young. So he kind of fits the profile of what you're looking for. But you're not going to trade him. So they're in a really tough position right now. The only other way to pull yourself out of this is to overcommit in spending during the offseason or to make trades in the middle of the year. That's the only way to do this. If you really want to try to catch up with the Cubs, catch up with the Braves or the Dodgers or even in the American League, the best teams there, you're going to have to spend a lot of money. Otherwise, you're going to be right here in the middle hoping that you compete most years, hoping you can catch lightning in a bottle with certain players and then make it to the postseason, and then who knows what happens. But there are two ways to do it, and the Cardinals are right in the middle.
Now, John Mozeliak did say yesterday that he didn't want to make a trade just because.
We're not going to do an irrational deal just to say we did one, right? I can sense sort of the frustration in the air here that, oh, you guys didn't do anything. But what if we had done something and it had just been bad? And so then we read about that too. So the object of this, or the goal of this, is to try to make successful and smart deals. And we just didn't feel we were at a point where we could do that. And we weren't just going to do it to just say we did it. Starting with like a Dylan Carlson. We weren't going to trade Carlson just for 10 starts or 11 starts, right? That became something that, you know, when your system isn't that deep, you get asked and hit on that a lot.
I think that most people understand that top end aspect of it, right? The Carlson, the Gormans, and protecting those assets.
I agree with that to an extent, but they did trade Oscar Mercado last year for virtually nothing.
Yeah, but he wasn't a guy. Like at the time, like he wasn't that sought after or highly thought of.
Right. But he was a guy that was tearing up their AAA team and was playing really well. And we've made this point before. They probably chose Bader over Mercado, which kind of looks bad as we speak.
Not great currently. So while I completely understand, I know you're not going to make a deal to just make a deal. And I also understand that you have guys within your organization that are untouchable, and that's fine. If you want to have Gorman, you want to have Dylan Carlson, but you have plenty of other assets, and maybe they're not the same as other teams have, but you know, sometimes you got to kill with the bulk of what you're giving. So somebody's going to give you one mid-level prospect that's a little bit better than yours. All right, well, we'll sprinkle in a second one. Or maybe we'll do a little something extra to get there. It's hard to conceive that there wasn't anything that could get done to make this team better without sacrificing the future.
Well, I think the problem is any way you look at it and any way a team has to build itself into a championship caliber team, whether it's for 1 year or multiple years in a row, all of the avenues to get there hurt. So you can either be bad for a long time, therefore get a bunch of draft picks several years in a row and hope you hit on those. Or you could spend a ton of money to try and cover up your deficiencies in drafting. Or you can trade prospects. You trade your prospect currency to get what you think you need in a given year, or hopefully if that person's under control and can help you for the next couple of years after the trade deadline, then that's a way to do it too, but that also hurts. There's just no safe way to do this.
Well, and we're talking about tearing down and building up for a team that's got the third best record in the National League. I don't think that the Cardinals are horrible.
No, I don't think they're horrible either. I think they're in the middle. I mean, that's kind of where they are.
That's where they are. So what they need to do is they needed to make an upgrade yesterday. There's no doubt about it. But I think it's a little bit disingenuous for Cardinal fans to be thinking about the idea of tearing it down simply because you don't feel like your farm system is good enough, or because you weren't able to make it yesterday, or because you aren't with the Dodgers at the moment. They're a whole lot closer to being good than they are to being bad.
Yeah, but the question just continues to be, how do you get over that hump?
Like, exactly.
Where is the next step? And it's frustrating. It's maddening. Again, I mean, yesterday at the trade deadline, I couldn't believe it. And honestly, for the first 20 minutes, I really was telling you to refresh it, because I was hoping and hoping and hoping that something else was going to happen. I don't know. We did get a text in to the Hot Shots text line 65780 that said, hold on. Oh, yeah, if you can't let go of a guy who can't even bat his weight, then you have problems. I don't know if that's the best way to look at things, certainly talking about Harrison Bader. And by the way, Harrison Bader I don't think was on their list of untouchables, but maybe he was on the list of, we're not going to give away an asset that we believe in that had success already at the big league level, that could do a lot of things for 10 or 11 games. I think that you have to look a little bit more long view than just looking at a batting average when it comes to a player.
And by the way, Derek Gould pointed out through his reporting that the Mets not only wanted O'Neill or Bader, but they wanted other prospects certainly in addition to those, and we don't know who those were.
Well, again, we're talking about it's going to be painful. You can't just get better at your own, you know, however you want to spend. You have to be able to do something that benefits the other team. And if you're trying to get better for 2019, because you, again, I keep going back to Paul Goldschmidt and the acquisition of Ozuna a couple of years ago. You don't get those guys unless you're trying to win right now.
And they thought those guys were really good. There is a school of thought out there, and I don't think it's unreasonable, that Zach Wheeler ain't that great, because I agree with that.
Well, if you take his numbers against everybody not named the Nationals or the Yankees, he's got a 2.18 ERA this year.
His ERA is 4.5.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah.
I said
if you take out
the Nationals, yeah, and you take out, which you've got three games against the Nationals the rest of the year, and you could probably skip him or work out the rotation where you don't have to pitch him against those teams. He's done really well against everybody else, and he is absolutely an upgrade over Michael Wacha.
But the question I would have is he going to be there, because he's just coming off of shoulder fatigue, and shoulder fatigue for a pitcher is generally not a very good thing. Now, he did throw 7 shutout innings against the White Sox today. And the other question is, how is he going to do when he has to pitch? Because he's never really pitched in those games in September that we talked about earlier. How's he going to do when there is pressure to perform?
How's Wacha going to do?
He was a 2013
awesome,
NLCS
actually.
MVP, man.
He was really good.
Okay.
There. But
that was a long time ago.
That
was 6 years ago.
Yeah, but how did he do under pressure?
Who?
Wacha.
6 years ago, great.
Ronch, how did he? Okay.
Okay, good, but it's 2019,
but,
man.
Well, I'm saying,
do you want to get better now or not? Or do you want this to be middling for the rest of the season and next season and the season
you
after that?
You think Wheeler is great? I think he's middling.
I don't think he's great. I think he's better than what they have, and that's absolutely clear. That is undebatable. He is better than Michael Wacha.
But Longview, don't you have to think about who also is going to be your center fielder and who's going to be your left fielder in the future?
Sure, but they have outfielders they like. They have other outfielders. Arozarena they like.
Do they like him? Because he's not here.
Well, why?
How much do they like him?
I don't know, man.
I don't either. That's what I'm
saying. We've been talking about him being up here. Should he not be here, maybe?
I don't think that we've heard that conversation, though, of he's a guy that's going to take over.
I will say
Marcel's going to be out the door. Okay, see, he's likely to be gone. Who knows what Dexter Fowler is? I don't know if I can part ways with a guy that I believe that can still be my starting center fielder. It could be O'Neill or it could be Bader.
I hear that, but do you want to take advantage of having Ozuna and Goldschmidt now?
Certainly. Yes, I'm pissed off they didn't make a trade, too.
Yeah.
I'm not mad that they didn't make the Wheeler trade. That doesn't make me mad. It's pretty much all the other ones.
Well, I think they could have done something different than that, but I understand what you're saying. I mean, Wheeler's not an awesome option, but he's an upgrade, and that's the only option they had.
And I think we can read into the fact that the Cardinals almost literally made Harrison Bader the face of their franchise during the offseason.
Yep.
That they think more highly of him than as a 195 hitter that they just had to send out.
Well, I'm sure they do. So then that leads us to another problem. Is their evaluation bad?
I'm not a guy that judges a player on 4 months of a season. It might be. Might turn out that he is a bad player. But I see ability there. And
well, I do too.
So I don't know if he's going to turn into a really good player or if he's going to be a 195 hitter for his career.
And that's the thing. That is their job to figure that out.
Right.
And I know there's a lot of luck that goes into it. I totally get that. But, hey, man, that's the job. Figure it out. You know, that's what you're here to do.
And that's what
that's what they did. Exactly.
Right.
That's the point.
So far in the last few years, that hasn't worked the way they've done it. And maybe it does. Who knows? Maybe they go on a tear. That's still totally possible. But it just doesn't look great up against everybody else they're competing with.
And
those teams that got better yesterday.
Let me make this point, because people think that if you have the perception that I'm in love with Harrison Bader, if I could make the move that Houston made, they traded Derek Fisher, a 26-year-old center fielder in the minor leagues, for Sanchez and Biagini, I make that move.
Yep. Me too.
But not for Zach Wheeler.
No, I'm right there with you on that. And we're spending so much time on this one specific trade and this one aspect. Nobody's debating the fact the Cardinals blew it yesterday. I don't think. And I still understand that don't make a move just because you want to make a move. I get that. There had to be something else out there. But there's also the glimpse to the future. And this one specific deal, Ronj, makes sense to you, doesn't make sense to me. It's fine. Like it is what it is. Ultimately, though, you are now internally going to have to step up when you had an opportunity to step on somebody's throat.
Right. And that's the thing, is that Wheeler is by far not my favorite option of all the guys that I thought were available or could have been available yesterday. But to me, I'm trying to think of this team in 2019 because they told us this was going to be a winning team. They told us they cared about 2019. So what I want them to do is, like, really, really care. And I know they care. I know they cared. So don't jump on
but
me for saying they
really,
don't care.
Really care.
You're damn right. And I think everybody else does, too, because you get 3 million people through those gates every year. They get tremendous ratings on television because everybody watches them. What Cardinals fans are saying is, we did our part. Now you do yours. Make this team better now.
And maybe the most alarming thing I've heard in the last 24 hours was Greg Amsinger's comment that in walking around the halls and talking to all of the MLB Network insiders, who are the best in the business, you've got Heyman, you've got Rosenthal, you've got Morosi, they weren't hearing that the Cardinals were even talking to other teams.
That's, yeah, we talked about that before the show, too, that you're hearing all these different rumors, and the Astros are in on this, the Yankees are in on this. You didn't hear anything about the Cardinals.
Who are in first place, or were in first place.
They are. But again,
I'm not saying it as a pump-up thing. I'm saying it as a strike-now thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I forgot who it was on Twitter yesterday. Might have been Charlie Marlowe at Fox 2, who said, and I think multiple people made this sentiment, you know, you tell the players, look, out of the All-Star break, show us you mean it, mm-hmm. and then we're going to reward you. They went 13-5, and nothing happened yesterday. Yeah. That's a failure.
Yep. Everybody should be ticked, no doubt about it. Coming up next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, we have a new guy here, a new teammate at 101 ESPN. Alex Ferrario has made the move, and he will be part of Blues coverage here on 101 ESPN moving forward, and he'll be here in studio next on 101 ESPN. We are thrilled about being the new home of the St. Louis Blues, and one of the things that I am particularly thrilled about is that a guy I've known for quite some time is going to provide some consistency in the broadcasts, along, of course, with Chris Kerber and Joey Vitale. Alex Ferrario is going to be part of our Blues broadcasts and part of your day here on 101 ESPN. He's been at KMOX for 5 years, right?
Six years at
KMOX, and now makes the move over here to 101 ESPN. Welcome to the family.
Guys, thank you so much. I was super pumped to get this opportunity to move to ESPN, but more importantly, super pumped to get to work with all three of you, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, Anthony Salter, the whole group of guys here. It's going to be fun.
Why were you reading all those names off your hand?
Well, I was worried I was going to mispronounce one. Like,
fair.
I had, like, phonetically put Brad Thompson on here just to make sure I knew what was going on. What's hilarious is, and I was telling somebody about this the other day, I've had paths cross with everybody here other than Bernie Miklas. He's the only one that I have not met. But, of course, Randy Carricker, very huge with Lindenwood University. I first met him, actually. Jeremy Rutherford allowed me to shadow him and was able to meet up with Randy Carricker and talk with him when I was a freshman in college. Chris Ranji, when you were working in Chicago, you were doing remote broadcasts in St. Louis from KMOX, so I met you there. Brad Thompson, I've met, of course, in the Cardinals clubhouse throughout the seasons doing pre- and post-game, and Anthony Stalter, and then I worked with Kevin Wheeler at KMOX. So yep. I've crossed paths with everybody.
Can I tell you, I'm not sure Bernie actually exists. I know
this is a figment
there's
of my
writing,
imagination.
He says he
writing.
Can beat me in a fight.
Apparently. No, he said he'd
like
kick
a
your ass.
Wait, when was this?
This morning.
At least we got a message about it.
On the Wheeler Show.
Pay per view.
So I guess it is real.
I don't think he could.
It's a fight for another day.
Yeah, it is.
No, seriously, it's a fight for another day, and we need to get some money on this.
I totally agree.
Do a little scouting report on it.
Yeah, I'm not.
Great cash.
So the timing is great with the Blues winning the Stanley Cup, and I know you have a great relationship with the organization and with so many of the players. And as we saw in the parade especially, but we've seen throughout all of the coverage of the Cup, the Blues really have assembled a good group of people.
Yeah, they really have, from the top down. I mean, when you think about, of course, the roster itself is just outstanding going for this season with basically the same group of guys, but the broadcast, the front office members, the sales staff, I mean, everybody there is fantastic. And Kerbs really gave me my first shot, gave me an opportunity to be an intern as a booth assistant for the Blues like 9 years ago when I was a college student, basically going to get coffee for Kelly Chase throughout the broadcast, going to bring batteries to Kelly Chase down on the ice level because his mic would die in the middle of a hockey game.
I was wondering what the batteries were for.
Just in case. And then, of course, Kerbs with all of his fantastic antics. And now with Joey Vitale in the broadcast, you know, I think, honestly, this move was more because of Joe Vitale. You guys have had him on, right?
He's awesome.
Yeah, Vitaly is fantastic. So
I love Chaser. I think Vitaly is hysterical in a very innocent way.
Both have no filters, but I think there's a different side of no filters. Like Kelly Chase is more of an anger no filter.
Yeah.
Vitaly is, I don't think he realizes what he just said.
He doesn't.
As a filter.
I love it.
Has anybody had the opportunity, Randy? He said he was going to bake you a loaf of his sourdough bread.
Yeah,
has that happened yet?
We haven't made that happen
Apparently
yet.
He's a bread
he told
maker.
Me that three times throughout the season, and I still haven't seen that loaf of bread.
And I owe him a carrot cake, so I'll have to text him and see if we can make that happen.
When are we going to do a 101 ESPN bake sale?
Good idea.
Alex, what do you bring to the table?
I
what
can make
you...
some special brownies.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
You live on the Illinois side, huh?
That's a great
come
show.
January 1st.
Yeah, it'll be a great show.
Damn, I'm in.
Old special brownies.
Ranji's eyes just bugged out of his head there.
I don't do that. That's not my kind of thing.
I like brownies.
But if you're offering... so, I mean, we're looking ahead to this team, and it's kind of hard to... You know, it's hard to want them to get better because you can't do any better than what they just did.
I mean, 82-0 in the regular season,
I
right?
guess. So you're just kind of hoping they stay about what they are, right? And I think they're pretty close to that.
Yeah, they seem like it. I mean, look, even the loss of Pat Maroon, which I'm not saying it's a loss yet, but when you look at the money situation, who knows if it's really going to happen, but everyone else is coming back. And I think that's the biggest takeaway, you know? Goaltending, exact same. Coaching staff, even better with the Mark Savard joining on. A power play, hopefully a power play that was, what, abysmal? In the regular season and the postseason, and then you're bringing a guy who's a specialist. And I mean, the forward group, it's the exact same, if not better, which I think is what fans should be most pumped about. You're bringing a Stanley Cup championship team back that had, what, a 41 game great season, a 41 game terrible season. Now you get a whole season with Craig Berube as the head coach.
Alex Ferrario is a newcomer here at 101 ESPN. He'll be involved with not only our Blues coverage, but throughout the year he'll be filling in on shows. He'll be over at the ballpark with the Cardinals, so it's great to have Alex here. One other note about the Blues, and we tend to look at this roster, which we should because it won the Stanley Cup, but there are a lot of young players that are pushing for time. We talked a lot about Kyrou last year. A guy like Zach Sanford got an opportunity in the playoffs. Blay got that a renewed opportunity come playoff time. They have a couple of young defensemen that they would like to give an opportunity to. Mikola is one of them. So I'm intrigued to see what young players make a move in camp.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing for me too, Randy. I mean, look, Jordan Kyrou, of course, is what everyone's going to be talking about, a guy that many thought was going to make the team for the full season and was on the team to start out of camp and then was sent down and spent the rest of his season there. But you got other guys. You mentioned Mikola, who impressed a lot of people in camp. Mitch Rinke, who had an incredible offensive season for the minor league affiliate, the San Antonio Rampage last year. This is a guy who could be quarterbacking a power play for this Blues team down the road. And I'll throw another one out, too. Defensively, Derek Pouliot that they signed, who is a top five overall draft pick, I believe, played for the Pittsburgh Penguins. They got depth, and I think that's the biggest thing. Klim Kostin is another one, a couple of other minor league forwards that could join the fourth line, but that's the intriguing factor in all of this, I think, because when you think of depth, you're like, okay, well, who's the first overall draft pick? You know, where's that guy? But they were bringing in guys like Sammy Blais, who was selected in, what, the ninth round and had a contributing factor into the Stanley Cup run. So there's a lot of players in that depth system, I think, that can have success and I think are going to prove competition when it comes to training camp.
I feel like a lot of those guys, too, you're really going to notice in training camp due to the fact that everybody else played so long. Like there was seriously, because I mean, maybe you're going to try to limit some of your reps, or maybe you won't be going into it with the full vigor. And by the way, Craig Berube is going to have to put a lot on the guys to get a lot out of them after a run like this. I mean, everybody's still having their day with the cup. I believe it's Jake Allen today. Mm-hmm. That is going to be interesting to see how Craig Berube is able to crack the whip on his guys to get them going. Not that they're not motivated, but it's just a different year. They played so long.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued by what the start of this season looks like. Like, they underperformed last year, there's no doubt about it. But this year, you're going to go into the start of a season after a Stanley Cup run. Like, that's not easy to repeat in hockey when it comes to playing four rounds and making it to the Stanley Cup final and going to game seven twice in that run. So I'm intrigued to see what that training camp looks like. And like you said, BT, I mean, you have all of these guys who just did that run who probably aren't going to be putting 110% into training camp because they're still healing up. But you got these younger guys, and just as we were curious of Mike Schilt's first training camp this past season with the Cardinals, I'm really intrigued to see what Craig Berube does in the first training camp with the Blues as the head coach, because, you know, Mike Yeo had different strategies than what Ken Hitchcock had, and the same can be said about Craig Berube. So I think there's going to be a physical element to it. I think there's going to be a lot of competition for spots when it comes to training camp, specifically on that third and fourth line, and Craig Berube's familiar with all of these younger players.
The Binnington-Allen relationship worked out really well this past season, and Allen was very helpful, famously. We've heard the stories about what he did to help along the young goaltender. How does that go in year two?
It's a really good question. I think it goes the exact same with a couple of peaks and valleys for Binnington. I don't think anybody should expect Jordan Binnington to be Patrick Waugh in his second season, although he did surpass Patrick Waugh a couple of records in his rookie year, but he's going to hit some type of lull. I mean, every goaltender finds a way to go through it. It's how does Jake Allen respond? And so many people last year talked about, you know, trading away Jake Allen and getting some cap relief and finding a backup goaltender. Let's be honest here. You're getting a backup goaltender who was a starting goaltender at about $4 million. Your last success with a backup goaltender was Carter Hutton, and look what that turned into. Then you tried Chad Johnson, didn't even work, and a backup goaltender, Jordan Binnington, comes into play. So Binnington's the number one guy. I wouldn't be surprised if you see 50-plus, 60-plus games of him playing this season, but at some point, Jake Allen's going to have to go on a stretch for you, and I think he's just as capable as any other backup goaltender in the NHL. I'd probably say he's your best backup goaltender in the National Hockey League.
Do you think he handles it mentally better in a second year? Because, again, he wants to be a starter.
Oh, yeah. I think he handles it mentally very well. I mean, look, it's his last season, I believe, on his contract with the Blues. So maybe it's something where go out there and perform and show people that you could be a starting goaltender like Brian Elliott did, like Carter Hutton did. You know, the backup goaltenders find success, it seems, when they play for the St. Louis Blues. But on top of that, with Jake Allen, I think he struggled mentally to handle the load of being a number one guy. I think that was the biggest struggle that Jake Allen went through. I think if he knows going into a season that he doesn't have to be the guy that everyone's relying on, that everybody's focusing on, I think he performs better. I think as a number two or a 1B, I think he will be a much better goaltender because there's not as much mental stress that goes into it.
And being a backup is one thing, but being a rich backup is fine.
That's, I mean, that's a, nice
that's
thing,
a little
yeah.
bit better. It's the way to do it, actually.
Yeah, I would think so. Now, I know that the Blues are up against it as far as, you know, cap situation goes, and they do have defensive depth, but I'm sure that you've already been thinking about it, talking about it. Kevin Shattenkirk, he gets bought out. Is there room for a reunion, do you think?
I think there is. And call me crazy here. Look, defensively, Kevin Shattenkirk was a liability. Saw that in Washington on their run when they traded for him. Saw it in New York while that was the reason he was bought out. But I think he can run your power play. You didn't have a guy last year to run your power play on the blue line. Alex Pietrangelo struggled, got better towards the end, still struggled. Colton Parayko is a guy that everybody wants up there, but for some reason the coaching staff doesn't see it. If you could find a way to bring in a Kevin Shattenkirk for, you know, maybe $2 million, if he's willing to accept that, which if you're bought out, I don't know why you wouldn't be, you might have to move on from Joel Edmondson. And I don't know if people are okay with that because Joel was a rugged guy, a guy who's not afraid to drop the gloves, and a physical defenseman. You're also kind of putting yourself lopsided when it comes to right-handed defensemen and left-handed defensemen. I mean, you're basically telling Shattenkirk, come over here, play on our third pair of defensemen as a right-handed shot. But if you can find a way to wiggle it in the cap space, and look, you still have to re-sign Ivan Barbashev. Who knows what that's going to be? I would imagine it's going to be somewhere around the $1-1.5 million range. If you could find a way to wiggle it into your cap space and move on from Edmondson, move on from Maroon, I think it would be an upgrade for you, at least offensively on the power play.
Alex Ferrario, give us a 1 minute background check so that we don't have to go online and do the background check. Just tell us where you've been, how you got here.
You know what? I already did. I want to see if it jives, though. Okay.
That's dangerous, actually. Well, I've been at KMOX for the last 6 years. As you mentioned, Randy, I was doing pre and post for the Cardinals, pre and post for the Blues on the weekend, hosting sports open lines, producing shows as well. Went to Lindenwood College. Went there for 6 years, actually. Went there for my bachelor's and master's degree.
Oh,
how about that for you? Not to rub it in your face, Ron. around you. I'm just saying.
Well, I have a master's too, but whatever.
No big deal, right?
I was hoping for 6 years of undergrad.
No, gosh, no. I'm not Van Wilder, please. I did the master's program while I was doing an internship, actually, for the Blues with Chris Kerber, and I was working for KMOX at the time. Before that, I did an internship with 590, did an internship with the Post-Dispatch, so I've kind of been all over the place. But
St. Louis guy?
Born and raised here in St. Louis. Love everything about the city of St. Louis, St. Louis sports. My wife's from here, high school sweethearts. Everybody loves to hear
what
that.
What high school?
She went to Notre Dame.
Okay.
All-girl high school, and I went to Fox High School.
All right.
Out in Arnold. That's
now
right.
Now everybody knows everything they need to know.
That's what
all the questions. I mean, those are the ones that were going to come in on the text line.
Yeah. Did it check out, Chris?
No. This one says robbed a bank. I'm in the...
That was a while ago.
Oh, somebody different. I'm waiting on... you know how you can do the criminal reports?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that.
Oh, the background
that
check,
email
it does,
back.
Yeah, it does take a little bit of time.
Yeah, that'll come in the manila folder. I think it's supposed to go to Haas's office,
we'll
right?
We'll do this again next week.
Yeah. We'll intercept that.
I may be back next week after that.
We'll let you know.
Great to have you here with us. Thanks so much for stopping by, and we're going to have a great time. Welcome to the family.
Guys, it's a pleasure. I'm so excited for this upcoming season. Thank you so much.
That's Alex Ferrario, the newest player here on the 101 ESPN team. What do you think, Ron? You okay with it?
What, the newest player?
Yeah.
Do you mean
it's a 101 ESPN?
He's married.
Team. No, not that kind of. He's not a
player.
Play.
Yeah.
Play. He's a player.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah,
so, when we put together the 101 ESPN softball team.
Oh, I got
you. Yeah, because that's happened since I've been here.
We have a softball team?
Coming up in the fast lane, LSU's.
If I find out you guys play softball, I'm going to be pinned, by the way.
Believe me. We need to get Stalters to run that.
Can you hit a softball?
Yeah, of course I can hit a softball.
Well,
then we'll have a team.
Yeah.
You did get
hitting in
DH
the
for or something, or what was it, pinch hit for in the
first
inning?
It was only in important games.
At third base.
You don't have to be a jerk. Finish your tees, Randy.
All right. Ed Orgeron just got an invite to a local Rotary meeting and got a little bit of Cajun fire thrown back at him. That's next before Take It or Leave It on 101 ESPN.